It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song.
Join together in a spirit of prayer, a prayer for Easter Sunday. May we understand redemption and self-sacrifice in life-enhancing ways. Maybe it is not by the death on the cross that we are saved, but by the death of our need to always be right, or to have the last word, to always have our own way. Perhaps we may be afraid that if we do not strive to be heard, our voice will be drowned out by a thousand different noises, that if we do not stand up for ourselves, we will be overlooked by others. These are real fears. May we redeem them for trust. May we trade our worries for ourselves for broader, more expansive concerns, and by them feel the universality of human need. Need for enough food, for clean water, for shelter, for personal acknowledgement, for enough love. May we be moved by such universal needs, the needs we all share. Our needs may be met, or maybe some of our personal needs are not being met. May we have the honesty to accept ourselves just as we are, and the strength of character to do what is necessary to take care of ourselves so that we may each, in turn, care for others. Easter is the high holiday, the day when Christians celebrate the supreme self-sacrifice of the one who called the Creator God so familiarly as Dad. Christians believe the whole world of possibilities changed in that sad act. Let us also seek to appreciate the unimaginable possibilities an attitude of self-sacrifice ushers into our world. Let us recall the little parrot in the Jataka tale the children heard. She shows us how the heart can be powerfully stubborn when it sets itself on the well-being of others. The promise which motivates the one who is self-sacrificing is not only the well-being of others, but the possibility of an ultimate kind of self, of satisfaction, not with the self, but within the self. The sense that there is truth in the statement, "I did everything I could." May we here today grow in our capacities to act and be with others in a spirit of self-sacrifice. And may we learn a new meaning for redemption, trading the confines of our self-interest for the expansive realms where concern for the well-being of all humanity, even all beings, can bring meaning into our lives abundantly, hope into our outlook irrationally, and joy into our hearts unexpectedly. So be it.
It's always struck me as ironic that while religion is supposed to be dealing with ultimate questions of the most radical nature, sermons are always expected to be rated G. And that is never more true than it is on Easter. If I were a Christian minister, and this were Christmas, the first words in my Christmas sermon would be, "You know there was never a virgin birth, don't you?" And for Easter, I'd begin by saying, "You know no corpse ever walked, don't you?" Or as the Jesus Seminar has put it, that Jesus' body decomposed like all bodies do. Now, there are liberal Christian ministers in this town saying that this morning. Maybe not those words, but giving their people that message. There's a famous saying, at least in divinity schools, that the first word in religion must always be no. That's no to clear the ground of nonsense so that there's room to speak of some of the abiding truths that all religions have and that are hard to hear until we say no to the nonsense. But it's hardest to say no to the two central myths of Christianity, that there was something supernatural about either the birth or the death of this man, Jesus. There wasn't anything supernatural simply because the world isn't built that way. Not now and not then. Let's back off for a second. Religions always carry the stamp of their birth. The time and place and culture of their birth is always carried with religions throughout their life. Christianity was born in the first century, and it was couched in a first century scientific worldview. Doesn't sound very scientific today. Scientific findings don't last very long compared to wisdom findings. But the first century scientific worldview is one that you have to understand anything in the New Testament that talks about the world. They believed in the first century that the universe was a fairly small local affair. And it had three stories. In the middle was the earth, which is sort of like a big flat pizza. You can see this worldview just by going outside on a sunny day. It's what the world looks like. Up above the flat plane of the earth was the dome of the sky. They called it the firmament because they thought it was made of rock. The Greeks even had their strongest god, Atlas, holding it up. That's how heavy this rock firmament was. It had holes in it that sunlight shone through at night. The good gods and the angels lived up above there, or at least up above the cloud layer on Mount Olympus, the place where light comes from. And down below the earth, and this is still first century science, was the place of hellfire and brimstone. And they had empirical proof for this. All you have to do to know what's below the earth is see what comes up out of volcanoes. That's where that stuff comes from. So it was a very scientific picture of the world. And that's the picture of the world into which this religion was born. You have to have it in mind, or a lot of the stuff in the Bible won't make any sense at all. But if it is in mind, it makes perfect sense. For instance, when the gospel writers say that the heavens opened and a big voice boomed down through the sky saying, "Behold, this is my beloved Son in whom I am much pleased." I'm sure it was a bass voice. Well, that could all happen. The sky isn't that far away. It's just right up there. It's a dome. It could split. It could happen somehow. And when you read that Jesus descended to hell or ascended to heaven, that's the picture of the world that that was happening in. It's the only picture of the world that could happen in. And the world isn't built that way, not now or then. But it takes some courage for ministers to tell the truth on Christmas Sunday or Easter, because in the opinions of most people, unfortunately, Christianity is about supernaturalism. This would have been a very rude and unpleasant surprise to Jesus. That's because for 2,000 years, there's been this awful contradiction between the religion of Jesus and the religion about Jesus. The religion of Jesus is a wonderful thing. One of many wonderful religions in the world. You find it in the teachings of his, the things he taught people about how to be and how to live, how to treat one another. The religion about Jesus is the one that was invented first by Peter and then by Paul. And if you remember, Peter is not only the rock on which
The church is built, it says, that's a pun, Peter and rock were the same word. But also, Peter was the one that Jesus called Satan because Peter had no idea what he was talking about. It's a very curious rock. The religion about Jesus is the religion of the baby and the cross, the supernatural religion that usually passes almost completely over the man Jesus and the things he actually said and taught and lived and died for. It's very strange. The religion about Jesus is about believing a certain story that few people, if you're honest, would even know how to believe, with the promise that if you do believe it, you'll be saved someday after you die. Jesus would have hated this story. He spent his whole life trying to put the ball in our court to empower us and to say it's our move. He would have hated this story. The religion of Jesus is much harder. There's nowhere to hide from it. And it's not supernatural at all. It's about how you can be saved or made more whole here and now, and how you can help make the world more whole here and now. It's about behavior, not belief. The message of Jesus was a message of liberation and empowerment. The messages from the religion about Jesus are too often aimed at frightening people into obedience to agendas that sometimes include horrible things, like hating gays or independent women, or sanctioning a war against people in Iraq that look a whole lot more like Jesus than they look like most of us. These are political and military agendas that Jesus would have seen as wrong, even hateful. And the religion of Jesus isn't about Easter. He never heard of Easter. He was a Jew. But there's another distinction that's even more important. Easter is a noun. It doesn't do anything, it just sits there. It's a noun that's supposed to be about something that happened once, a long, long time ago, and only happened once. The religion of Jesus isn't a noun. It's a verb. The religion of Jesus is about Eastering. It's about the miracle of new life coming from old, of life out of death, right here, right now. If you don't think that's a miracle, you haven't experienced it yet. When you do, you'll know. Nothing supernatural, though it feels so magical when it happens, doesn't it? Do you have a light? Jesus asked. Don't hide it. Share it. Do you have a gift of life? Don't hide that either. Invest it back in life. Share it with others. Give it to others. Life is about honoring a spirit of life, a gift from God, if you like, that comes and goes as it likes, but when that gift of life comes our way, it can make all the difference between feeling dead and feeling alive. And some of you know this from experiences in your own lives. Literalistic religions promise a Garden of Eden. My God, what an awful place that would be to live. Let me think about this. The Garden of Eden is a place where only obedient, unquestioning, and uncurious people are welcome. You would be bored to death. It's a garden where no one is allowed to grow into their full humanity. It's not a garden at all. It's a trap. A trap in which your spirit can die, because living spirits, like living people, always question, always grow, always change. It's what makes life so fragile. Literalistic religions say you can't save yourself, it can't happen now, and it can't happen here. Liberal religions, all of them, say, if not now, when? If not here, where? If not you, who? And the answer is new life can come to you here and now. Every liberal religion in the world says some version of this. Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism. They all have literal levels and liberal levels. And understood liberally, symbolically, metaphorically, they're all saying new life can come to you here and now. Not only that, you're worthy of it. It's a wonderful message. It's pure Eastering. If this were Christmas, I'd say that honest religion is like a manger made ready for the birth of the sacred within us. The Easter Bunny doesn't need a manger. Actually, I've really never wanted to know how or why that rabbit lays colored eggs and foil-wrapped chocolates. I think what honest religion offers, and it's free, though it's not cheap, could be called not a Garden of Eden, but a Garden of Eastering. A fertile place where new life is welcome because we trust the future more than the past. And that's a lot of trust. That's how I think of honest religions. That's how I think of this church, this community, as a Garden of Eastering. A couple years ago, I heard our current board vice president tell someone that the form of governance in this church, and I know he made this up on the spot, that the form of governance in this church was a duocracy. That those who do shape the place and give it its spirit and its direction. That's a Garden of Eastering. That's a place giving birth to the future. And before you leave today, we're going to give you a gift, a symbol of this Eastering spirit to take home as a reminder, but more about that later. When you think about it, and this is true of every church, of every flavor, every kind of church, when you think about it, our annual budget is not really paying for magic. You can't buy that. It's really just paying the costs of providing a garden and hiring a staff to tend it. But not the new life that grows in it. We never know what or where that new life will be because that comes through you. I want to give you some examples of how down to earth, yet magical and transformative, Eastering is. These are just about a half a dozen that I've thought of from this place. For one, I've never seen another church with the range of high-quality music that we have here. Think of the weekly offerings from Brent, Brian, John, and the many, many musicians that we have. Almost every imaginable style of music is here, from a choir singing Bach to a soloist singing a song by Joni Mitchell or the Beatles, or the wonderful music from Pieces of East that we have this morning. There's almost nothing we won't try if it can carry a spirit that can move us. And that's always what it's about. That's why the music program is great. It's a garden in which the spirit can sing. Or think back a few months and ask why we had such a super Christmas Eve pageant. Why was it so nice? Where was the magic? Well, because Vicky Rao, our ministerial intern, took charge of it in her inimitable way. She's wonderful when she takes charge of things. Because a few members who had experience in set design and theater direction came out of nowhere and offered to lend their talents. Because a lot of parents drove a lot of kids to rehearsals. And because 400 or 500 of you came to be here for it. Eastering doesn't have a season, unlike Easter. It can even happen at Christmas. And have you walked through the lovely landscape garden that we have back in the back of the church? If you haven't, you ought to walk through that. It's an amazing sight. 5 years ago, it was a playground filled with dangerous junk that had been condemned. It's true. A condemned junk heap. Isn't that great? There'd been talk about doing something, but these aren't the kinds of things that are going to rise to the top of a budget. I was in the back of the church, and who sees it? Then a few members decided that we deserved and needed something beautiful instead of something ugly, junky, and condemned. They talked with me and the board. They consulted with landscapers. They researched top-quality playground equipment. They had professional plans drawn. They raised money. They put in a lot of work. And now a condemned dump has been transformed into a place of beauty for all ages. That's a miracle. It may seem very ordinary, but that's the way they happen. This church has been designated a green sanctuary by the state of Texas. It's the only church in Texas to be designated a green sanctuary. Why? Why would anyone care? Because some people who are more sensitive to the grounds than the rest of us felt called to transform it. And they worked at it, and they did it. And that's how Eastering works. It's a spirit that came out of nowhere and inspired some people to change the world from a dump into something beautiful, a garden of Eastering. Now, very soon, a few weeks, out in the foyer, I think it's called foyer in Texas, out in the foyer, we'll have a huge 12-foot-long credenza against the wall back there. A gorgeous thing. Custom designed and built for us. Why is it going to be there? It wasn't in the budget. Something like that isn't going to make it to the top of a budget. But one member got so sick of the look of the foyer, he decided to do something. He got others to help. Talked with the rest of the board, collected money, and soon there will be a new locus of beauty out there, born of the imagination and care of ordinary people right here in this room. That's Eastering. Our new Friday night movies that you heard about earlier that started this past Friday, 2 days ago. How did they start? Several months ago, I thought we needed more opportunities for community that didn't have anything to do with fundraising. And I thought that well-chosen movies might be a way to do it. We could just have free movies. I solicited donations from several members who generously contributed a total of over $2,000, and we bought a good projector and an 8-foot screen. Then some other members came forward out of nowhere. They always come out of nowhere. It isn't quite nowhere. They're coming forward out of a garden of Eastering. You just don't see them until they come forward. And they wanted to help. They decided we should have soda and popcorn for a more complete movie experience. They put it together. We had our very first movie night 2 days ago, this past Friday. The members who put it together said that if we ever got 40 people for one of these, they'd consider it a success. We had over 85 people Friday. That's Eastering. New life appearing where before there had been nothing but a big room, a big garden, waiting for something to be born in it. This summer, some of our high school kids will be taking part in a freedom ride organized by the UUA. It's a long bus ride retracing some of the steps of the freedom marches of the civil rights movements of 40 and 50 years ago. Why? Because one member thought it would be neat to have some such trip for kids. And after more heads got involved, this trip emerged, money was donated, and our kids will have a trip this summer they will never forget to reconnect them with some terribly important parts of what it means to be an American who cares enough about freedom to make personal sacrifices for it. Eastering. The church budget, as essential as it is, can't create the magic that brings life to this place. All it can do is pay for the garden and hire the staff to tend it. But whether the garden will give rise to new shoots of life, that's up to you, and it's up to that spirit that dwells in you, that makes you aware of little things here and there where there could be life but there isn't now, and you see how it could happen. And you know, we're not just talking about the church. We're talking about your lives too. Because besides the kind of institutional Eastering that help make this church alive, there are those more down-to-earth personal gifts of life and grace that come to us. Last year, a member of this church was diagnosed with a form of pancreatic cancer. The prognosis for pancreatic cancer is almost always negative. She went through tests and ordeals of treatments. This week she sent me an email saying there are no signs whatever of any cancer cells, and her prognosis is now for a normal life of another few decades. Easter. And just last night, I received an email from Kathy Harrington that I want to share with you. Many of you know that Kathy was our ministerial intern 2 years ago, who is now a settled minister in Ludington, Michigan. And many of you know that last November, Kathy's 26-year-old daughter, Leslie, was murdered in California in a crime that still has not been solved. It's about as devastating as it can get for a parent, any parent. And it was devastating for Kathy. She considered leaving the ministry. She took off 6 weeks. She spent time with her family. She found a grief counselor. Her church covered for her and provided all the services for December. She took 10 days to go to Nicaragua, which has been kind of a magical place for her. And this past week, she spent 4 days on a street retreat in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, something she's done before with the Faithful Fools, where you go out for 4 days with no money, and you eat, and you beg, and you sleep with the homeless people in San Francisco. Here is the email Kathy sent last night. I just returned from a week on the streets of the Tenderloin with the Faithful Fools. I went in search of God and, much to my surprise, found her. I ran into a homeless man named Will, who I met last year. He said the Lord put it into his heart to give me a gift. It was a magnificent silver cross that had belonged to his mother, a gift of grace that has moved me from despair to the realm of healing and wholeness. It was one of many glimpses of the divine this past week. Finally, grief has released its deadly grip on me, and I'm able to breathe again. I think I can actually walk through the valley of the shadow of death now, instead of staying forever in the shadow. Easter. We all live in the valley of the shadow of death, the valley where death, disease, and despair can strike at any time. Without rhyme or reason, it can be scary in that valley. It's no wonder so many people live in fear rather than trust and hope. But there are more than shadows in this valley of life. There are also gardens, amazing gardens in which new life can and does grow for us here, now. It may not be supernatural, but surely it feels miraculous. Let us go seeking those miracles and seeking to be part of those miracles for the world around us. Happy Eastering.